Mary.
Thank you very, very much for the opportunity to share. It's an incredible blessing, and I deeply appreciate it. I have had a long history of losing and gaining weight. I'm sharing one picture now, and this is me. When I'm not even at my highest body weight, I'm probably about 20 to 30 pounds below my highest body weight. And I'm going to share just one other picture real quickly. And in this case, I only share it kind of reflecting on what our speaker just spoke to, that knowledge means nothing. Here I am as a nurse earning my PhD in nursing. And you can see again, and this is at the time when I have already lost 100 pounds three plus times, you know, three times. And the bottom line is that I have this disease called, and an addiction called compulsive eating. And I didn't realize I had that for the longest period of time. I just thought I was off. You know, I grew up and matured very rapidly at 10 years old. I was already 5'10", and very different from other kids as the oldest child and 11 children and a lot of responsibilities. I know now certainly that the disease of addiction is generational. And, you know, my mom definitely had the disease when she shared some of her stories of her mom making her ugly clothes so that she would lose weight. She wouldn't get pretty clothes unless she lost weight. And guess what? My mom made ugly clothes for me, hoping it would help me lose weight. Well, that didn't work anyway. And then also, she talked about how she would manipulate her father into buying ice cream for her during the World War II in England, where you're on food stamps. And she would pretend to be sick so that she would get ice cream so that she could feel better. You know, so it's one of those things that, yes, it is generational. It's a disease of isolation for me, absolutely, positively. In trying to lose weight desperately, I realized that it wasn't until I got to a place of desperation each time that I would start the realm of losing and actually keeping off up to 100, 130 pounds the first time. But it was a situation where growing up, that food was what protected me and saved me. You know, I've been through what many people in OA have experienced. You know, I've been through rape. I've been through many painful situations where food was my comfort. It's the only way I knew to do it. I certainly learned as a nurse how to use insulin, disease of isolation. I would always eat well in front of people. Absolutely. How can you possibly weigh heavy, Mary? Because you always eat so well. People assumed I had a hormonal issue because I always ate well, right? In front of people, but behind the scenes, I would steal. I would, you know, from be it the home larder or from a store, I would steal and buy candy and such because that's what gave me that sense of peace for whatever reason it was. Even as a nurse, yes, I learned how to use insulin. I was a diabetic. I was on maximum doses of diabetic meds, up to 100 units of insulin a day. And yes, my A1Cs were perfect because I would use insulin. I was an insulin bulimic. I would use insulin to chase my blood sugar so I could have as much as I wanted. Okay, talk about a disease of absolute insanity, absolutely crazy insanity. Imagine myself weighing 416 pounds at my highest weight as a critical care nurse, educating patients after a heart attack about diet and exercise. Talk about the perfect role model, right? again, a disease of absolute insanity that I did not realize. First of all, I didn't even realize it was a disease at that time. So each time I lost over 100 pounds, it was because I had something desperate I had to deal with. The first time was I wanted to get a new job. I knew no one would hire a 416-pound person in a healthcare profession. So yes, I started on a pay and weigh, and I actually have a picture there. I lost 104 pounds in 24 weeks on that and kept on going. I applied for the position, got the position. During the interview process, they asked me, what was I going to do about my weight? I explained what I was doing. They said, you're going to keep on doing that, right? Because I still had a lot to go. And of course, once I lost a certain amount, then it started creeping back again. The second time, the chief nurse executive for the region called me into the office because I was falling asleep at meetings, you know, sleep apnea, snoring. And she said, just stop eating, Mary, just stop it, as though I had any control over this. But again, that fear got me into, okay, I'm going to lose this weight. I'm going to lose this weight. And I would eat well my salads and everything and do what I was supposed to do. Okay. The third time, I was gaining almost all the weight again. I was really fearful. I wanted to know, why am I trying to kill myself? And I asked for a referral to a psychiatrist. And they referred me to an MSW who, first of all, made sure I was not, in fact, suicidal, which I wasn't actually, even though I felt that way sometimes. And she said, Mary, you have a disease. No one had ever said that to me. You have a disease and you're an addict and you have to go to OA. I said, okay. I found an OA meeting in Napa every Saturday morning, got to get away from my mom for a while, got to watch the beautiful air balloons, went to the meeting, great social group, never worked the steps, never reported my food. Lord knows no one was going to know my food. And lost over 100 pounds again. Yay! Feeling good about myself, quit going to OA. I had it licked. I knew what I was supposed to do. And then came the fourth time. In this case, I needed knee surgery really badly. And I had to qualify and I had to lose 100 plus pounds, not to get to a healthy body weight, just to get to an acceptable body weight. I actually spent $100,000 to buy a swim spa. So me and my friend in isolation, because I wasn't going to put my body in any spa kind of situation, which had, or a, you know, those places you go to exercise anyway, so that people would see my body. And yes, I lost 100 pounds again. And I thought, oh my goodness gracious sakes alive. How is this happening? But guess what? I met the qualifying weight. I met the qualifying weight and got signed up on the list for surgery. And in 2 months, I gained 25, insert the appropriate four-letter word, pounds. And I said, this is absolutely ridiculous. I couldn't stop. And I said to myself, at this point, I reached the most extreme level of desperation. And I said, if on New Year's Eve, I was at that time at the end of the year, if I cannot follow this plan for 24 hours, I'm going back into OA. I couldn't do it. I found the OA meeting in Sacramento. January 5th, I walked into my room, into the rooms, and that was my first day of abstinence. I now have 4+ years of imperfect abstinence, but I have abstinence. The second week, my sponsor found me, and I began the journey of working the steps. It was a very interesting journey. I knew I needed a sponsor stronger than me, who could deal with any kind of BS I would throw out there. And I was a professional BSer, believe me. Absolutely. And But I was desperate enough that if she told me to do something, I did it. I was very grateful that she really took her time over those first three steps, 3 months. She said, Mary, we've got to take it really, really easy. You've got to be able to really understand steps 1, 2, and 3. Nothing else is going to happen unless you can really understand steps 1, 2, and 3. And I'm very, very grateful. I just realized I didn't set my timer. I'll assume I'm at least 5 minutes down. Okay. And the steps were really critical for me. That first one, honesty, that I am powerless. To this day, I need to remind myself, I am powerless. Not only just food, which is the key symptom of the disease, the symptom of my addiction was that, but I am powerless. I am powerless over the fact that this disease is a disease of body, mind, and spirit. That was really hard for me to admit because I was always supposed to be a sane person, right? To admit I have a disease of insanity, that was scary, really, really scary. Absolutely body, mind, and spirit. So step one, honesty, I'm powerless, and my life was unmanageable. Now, I did not believe that in any way, shape, or form. I had a very manageable life, a very responsible job and such, and I was totally blind to how unmanageable my life actually was. And little by little, she teased it out of me, and I fought it tooth and nail. I fought it. Many of my dear friends got phone calls from me saying, about my sponsor. And they would go, blah, 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 blah. I said, Daniel, you're right. I think it was three times I tried to fire her. And it was so weird that we always managed to pull it out. Okay. We always figured a way to keep on moving. But I had to have that honesty first. And then I had to have some kind of hope. Was there a way out of this hell of being powerless and life unmanageable? And to say that, have that hope that something could restore me to sanity, because by then I had, in fact, accepted I was insane. And yes, I did find an outside person to help me in terms of therapy, and she very experienced in the 12 steps way of life. And to this day, I still work with her. That's been a blessing too, because I could not see the unmanageability of my life. But I developed that hope and be able to write a job description. I call it a job description of what my power is, what I need from my higher power. And that can change at any time. And that was so life-giving to me. To have not my parents' religion, not my mom's religion, because that was hellacious, but a higher power that was mine that works for me. And that was life-giving. And finding the faith, I mean, little bits growing faith that allowed me to make a decision that, okay, it seems to be work. I am going to turn my life over. I can turn my life over. I can do it. And those are such scary things for me. But fear, to talk about fear being the root of our disease, absolutely positively. And the courage to go through that searching, fearless moral inventory. I was always a moral person. Where was all this stuff about I'm not a moral person? Look, my goodness gracious sakes alive. When I really looked at my life, guess what? I was not a perfect soul. I was not a perfect this, a perfect that, perfect anything. And having the ability to face that and to truly be willing to do that was so important. And then to have the integrity. I mean, that took a lot of courage to go through that with my sponsor. And then the integrity to share that with someone and to admit to another person, I mean, to God and to myself, And a lot of that courage and fierce was really looking at myself. It's so freeing once you get rid of all the garbage. And believe me, there's still garbage there. But as you peel it off, peel it off, peel it off, it is so life-giving and freeing. And I'm so grateful for that. And then the willingness to say, okay, I guess I do have these defects of character. I like to call them my defaults. Where are my go-tos? Things I go to when I kind of don't want to face the truth or move around or try to want to look better or be the this, whatever it is, those defaults and the willingness to, first of all, identify them and being willing to say, okay, I can try slowly but surely living without them. And it's actually possible. It's actually possible. And it's life-giving and free. And the humility to actually say, yes, I need to have them removed. Please help me. And the frustration of I've always been a person for instant gratification, hence food, instant gratification. I want instant gratification that they are gone. And my higher power has decided that there's a good reason that there's an opportunity for me to practice them and recognize them and let them go again. And each time it gets a little bit shorter, a little bit shorter, a little bit shorter, so I can see them faster and let them go more easily, but it takes a while. And the self-discipline, looking at the harm I caused others, that was hard, but part of it was also truly recognizing the harm. The greatest number of amends I've had to make have actually been to myself. And to recognize how much myself, my ego, that the ego has been the source of so many issues in my life. And the willingness to make amends to myself and to forgive myself. Yes, I have a disease. I have a disease and a disease of insanity. And the food was the only way I knew how to survive whatever it was I was working through. And to forgive myself in that situation. And know that we have a better solution for which I am deeply grateful. So I love the principle of love, making amends again to myself and others. And amends I never thought were harm I had caused. My sponsor really had to help me see where I thought I was taking care of people and doing things for them and all this kind of stuff was the good thing to do. But actually, sometimes that's causing harm because it's not allowing them their independence and ability to learn and be who they are instead of who I think they should be. And so making amends for that was a scary but truly a life-giving experience to be able to do that. So when you get to that part, then you get 10, 11, and 12. And 10, 11, 12 is every single day, that perseverance of working the program and just knowing, making the calls, doing the service. I'm so grateful for each and every sponsee I've had. I'm so grateful for my sponsor. I'm grateful for the opportunity to share because it helps me remember the humility, the importance of knowing steps 1, 2, and 3, that I have to be honest, have that faith, the hope and the faith. It all starts with that. It's the core of our recovery. So every day I have to live this program. Still talk to my sponsor just about every day. Every once in a while, because I'm traveling a lot across the world now. She's on the other side of the world right now, but we still find times where we can connect with each other, okay? I try to make meetings even when I'm out of the country. Thank goodness for Zoom. That's one benefit of the pandemic. We got these Zoom meetings up, and I'm so grateful for them. So the journey through the 12 steps has been life-giving for me. And my life is different. Today, when they talk about the promises, life's beyond my wildest dreams, absolutely, positively, I have a life now beyond my wildest dreams. I've finally retired. I figured I was going to work till I'm dead. I had no other vision of life except for working. That was it. I buried myself in my work. And guess what? There's life outside of work. And I've been retired now for a couple of years. Talk about life beyond one's wildest dreams. I'm so blessed. I'm so blessed now, not just be at an acceptable body weight for surgeries, but moving into an at hanging around the healthy body weight as defined by my physician. You know, what a miracle that is. Yes, losing over 100 pounds four times was part of the journey I had to take. And with OA and with abstinence and being at meetings and being humble and doing service and receiving service and being part of, I never have to do that again. I could if I got cocky. And lost humility, was not visiting this program every single day, I could be there again. So I do have the promises. I have a brand new, I've got 21 nieces and nephews. When you're one of 11 kids, you got a lot of nieces and nephews, right? 21 nieces and nephews, all of whom are late 20s up, oldest one almost 40. And I finally have my first grandniece or nephew, who is now 5.5 months old. And holding her, I made that promise. I'm going to see you graduate from high school. I'll be 89. I can do that. If I don't, I don't. But I have a goal now. I have something different and exciting to live with. Next year, I'm doing 6 major trips outside of the country. 3 of those, on each one, I'm taking a different niece with me and sharing my life with them and helping them see. Because when you talk about this disease, it is through the family. Well, I look at all my brothers and sisters. You can just line us up and go, yep. It's there. But to see the next generation saying, I see it. I'm not going there. How do we live differently so we don't have to be consumed by the disease that we have all inherited? Okay. So I'm deeply grateful today. So deeply, deeply grateful that there is a program called OA. And I'm one of you. I'm one of the many. Who we all have different backgrounds. We all came to it at different times in our life. You know, I was in my late 60s before I finally got it. The fourth time, I'm sticking. I have to do it because I cannot do it on my own. But I'm here forever. I'm here forever because with that, I have this life beyond my wildest dreams. I can be present for my nieces and nephew. I can be present for my grandniece. And I'm so grateful that she lives nearby so I can be that person who's present. And what a blessing. So thank you so much. Thank you for the opportunity to share my experience, my faith in this program, and my hope. My nieces and nephews wanting to know, Mary, how? Because they want to know. Their greatest fear is to be like their parents, and they know it's too easy. And there is an answer, and I can help them with that. And I'm so grateful. Thank you.